Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Francine Foss. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Foss is a Professor of Medical Oncology and Dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Francine welcomes Dr. Meredith Wallace. Dr. Wallace is an associate professor at Yale University School of Nursing, and she joins Dr. Foss this evening to talk about prostate cancer and the recent changes in the field of cancer survivorship.
How have things changed over the last couple of years?
Well, I think one of the things about cancer that's very interesting is we've seen a change with the rising older adult population. So cancer used to be thought of as a more deadly disease where people used to be diagnosed and there weren't a lot of treatments available and people would pass away soon after diagnosis. But as people have continued to age and the prostate and the cancer treatments have continued to evolve, people are living a long period of time with cancer. And we can actually think of cancer more in a chronic illness framework than we ever have before.
So Meredith, we've talked to some other guests on the show who've talked about survivorship, particularly the survivorship program at Yale. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this whole field of survivorship?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm a nurse, and I have an advanced practice nursing certification and licensure. And in one of my clinical roles, I used to do a lot of prostate cancer screening. And I would find that I would screen all these men for prostate cancer, and then I would call and give them the results, and many of them had positive results. And many of them were going for very aggressive treatments, which were not clinically indicated at that time. And the aggressive treatments for prostate cancer, while very appropriate for some patients, often result in some adverse effects. And given that some of these men weren't appropriate for these treatments, those adverse effects could have been avoided. So it made me question why men were going toward more aggressive treatments when, in fact, they could be living successfully and surviving with prostate cancer without aggressive treatments.
When you talk about these aggressive treatments, are you talking about the surgeries primarily?
Sure. Radical prostatectomy is the surgery for prostate cancer, and then also radiation therapy via external beam radiation or brachytherapy, which is radiation seeds.
So prostate cancer is a unique disease because patients are not necessarily treated immediately. In some cases, they're watched and waited, and this is a difficult concept for some patients on the flip side of things. Can you talk a little bit about that whole concept and how difficult it is for patients with that idea that maybe they're not going to get treated for their cancer?
Absolutely. It's very difficult to be diagnosed with prostate cancer and then not be directed immediately toward treatment. In fact, I did a focus group with some men who were diagnosed with prostate cancer, and they said prostate cancer is, or cancer in general, is very closely associated with death in my mind. And I think that's the way a lot of people think about cancer. And so to be told, oh, well, let's just watch and see how it progresses is often very difficult for some patients. Watchful waiting is really very appropriate for men with prostate cancer who fit a certain clinical profile. And it entails a course of going to the urologist or physician every 6 months to have the PSA evaluated, perhaps to have some repeat biopsies and clinical examinations to determine if the cancer is progressive. And prostate cancer is unique in that it's a very slow-growing cancer, and many of the prostate cancer tumors that are diagnosed through a routine PSA are actually very indolent and don't require immediate treatment. And these patients would benefit very well from that period of active surveillance or watchful waiting.
Do patients ask questions about watch and wait after they are given the diagnosis, or do you think that most patients don't really know that this is an option?
I think that most urologists and medical oncologists who diagnose patients with prostate cancer do present all of the options for the patients, but in fact, it's a difficult option for patients to understand because it doesn't actually require them to do anything. And when men are diagnosed with prostate cancer and their families are dealing with this diagnosis with them, they want to do something. They want to take control of it and, in some cases, just get rid of it. So that's why active surveillance isn't always well thought of in terms of a reasonable management option.
Can you step back a little bit and tell our audience about the whole process of prostate cancer screening, what is done in what population of men and how often?
Sure. So we're very fortunate to have what we call a prostate-specific antigen, which is a biomarker for prostate cancer, or it's abbreviated PSA. And it's a very inexpensive blood test, which is routinely done on men, usually through their annual physical exams over the age of 50. In men who are in high-risk categories, like African-American men, or men who have a first-generation relative, a brother or father who had prostate cancer, the screening may begin at an earlier age, such as 40. And this PSA is generally, we like it to be below 4, and men who are above 4 are at risk for prostate cancer, and the progress of the PSA is really something that we've been looking at. So sometimes men will have a PSA of 4, but it remains 4 for a long period of time, and that shows that the prostate cancer, the activity in the prostate gland isn't progressing, but we're looking at the what we call PSA velocity, or the speed with which the PSA changes, to determine if men are if the prostate cancer is progressing. And the PSA is a marker of the activity within the prostate gland. It doesn't necessarily mean that the man has prostate cancer. So in fact, the PSA could be elevated in a man who has benign prostate disease as well.
So, in addition to the PSA, when a man is screened, do all men undergo the digital rectal exam, which is probably not the most pleasant thing, but certainly part of the whole process?
Yes, not at all pleasant, but yes, it is recommended that men go through the digital rectal exam. And we also want to look at men's symptomatology. Are they having any problems with urination? That's one of the main key factors that shows that there might be some growth in the prostate gland.
Do you find that most men are sensitive to these changes that they're undergoing with respect to the urination, or like the rest of us, do a lot of men try to deny these things as they get older?
Well, this is the problem, is that the two major areas that are impacted by prostate cancer are sexual function and urinary function, and both of those things change as the process of aging continues. So it is very easy to attribute changes in urination or changes in sexual function to the aging process and not think in terms of, oh my, I might have something going on with my prostate gland.
So for most men over the age of 50, should they expect that their doctor on routine exam is going to check these things, or should patients be alerted to ask about this and start thinking about this?
It's always smart for patients to be their own advocate, but yes, most, it is the clinical practice guideline to screen men for prostate cancer, so most physicians will go ahead and independently do that with their annual blood work.
So once a patient has a PSA over 4, you mentioned that it's possible to watch and wait, or possibly to do additional testing at that time to determine whether that's important or whether it needs to be followed. Can you talk a little bit about that process once a man has a PSA elevated?
What sure. Happens? So once a man has an elevated PSA, we would refer him to a urologist to have further evaluation of that, and that would generally entail a biopsy of the prostate gland, where they would look at specific areas in the prostate gland to see if there's cancer activity going on there. And so men would proceed with that process fairly immediately after a elevated PSA would be found.
And then after the biopsy, say the biopsy shows prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The patient would then have a discussion with regard to what the treatment possibilities are?
Right. So the urologist would probably sit down with the patient and give all of the options. And depending on a number of factors that were found with the biopsy, as well as what the PSA level is and how the PSA level has been changing over time, some options would be more appropriate for than others. So if the PSA were changing rapidly, if the patient had a very aggressive prostate cancer within the gland, then they would probably be recommended for fairly aggressive treatment immediately. If the prostate gland showed that it was not aggressive cancer, if the PSA level has remained stable over a period of time, if the man's of advanced age, generally over the age of 65 or 70, then the patient may be a very good candidate for active surveillance or watchful waiting.
And it's true that not every man with an enlarged prostate who has symptoms with respect to urination necessarily has to worry about prostate cancer in that gland.
Absolutely, because that could actually be very symptomatic of benign prostate disease, which is also common as people age.
Some men have concerns about some of the medications that they're taking, particularly medications that men are taking now for sexual dysfunction, and whether those possibly could lead to prostate cancer or affect the course of prostate cancer. Can you comment about that?
There's no evidence that I'm aware of that has shown that the oral erectile agents are increasing the risk of prostate cancer.
I guess that's a relief for a lot of us out there.
Yes.
The other question is with respect to hormone use, because men are now starting to use testosterone replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a risk?
Not that I'm aware of at this point in time, but I think that there needs to be further testing on that.
Sure. With respect to other things that you talk to men about when they have an elevated PSA, are there other lifestyle issues or other things that men are concerned about that we need to talk about?
Well, again, the research is still forthcoming in that area. You know, we know that prostate cancer is very high in this country as opposed to other countries. So there is some concern about the high fat in the U.S. diet that certainly should be considered. And one thing that medical oncologists and people who work with cancer will always say, what's good for your prostate gland is what's good for your heart is also good for your prostate gland. So low-fat diets, exercise, a lower amount of alcohol or a moderate amount of alcohol intake, and smoking cessation are things that we can all do to improve our health that most likely will impact the risk of prostate cancer.
And all of these supplements that we see advertised on TV that supposedly improve prostate health, are they of any benefit?
Again, we just don't have any research to show that they are at this point in time, but hopefully there will be some further research that gives us a better indication of whether they're beneficial or not.
So once you have a man with an elevated PSA and a man who has, say, low-grade prostate cancer, that man is going to go on what you call active surveillance.
If the man with his family and his oncologist or urologist decide that that's appropriate, a period of active surveillance would probably be very beneficial for this patient. And what we do know now is if patients fit that clinical profile, even delaying prostate cancer treatment for a few years is not going to impact their overall survival.
What about the role of imaging studies like PET scans and bone scans at this point early on?
Well, there would probably be no indication of needing to do that early on if the prostate biopsy and the PSA levels are fairly low and show that it's not aggressive disease. The likelihood that it would have gotten into the bones is not very likely.
And you're monitoring the PSA how often as you're following these men? Is it once a year or is it more often than that?
About 6 months, every 6 months or so.
And as you mentioned, there's no need to do any imaging studies after that as long as there are no symptoms.
Right. I mean, different patients differ in terms of their symptomatology, so that an individual urologist might suggest that. But overall, if they're able to evaluate the growth of the prostate gland through the PSA, that would not be necessary.
Can you talk to us a little bit more now specifically about your work and your involvement with these patients?
Sure. So knowing that men may be very appropriate for active surveillance clinically, but may be very hesitant to do that because it's so very difficult to live with prostate cancer, myself and some other urologists, as well as cancer researchers, have developed a website which we hope will help men to manage the uncertainty associated with living with cancer as a chronic illness. And the website focuses on two specific areas. Number one is changing the way we think about cancer and looking at it as a chronic illness as opposed to a instant killer. And then, and we do that through looking at the way we think about different things and looking at cancer maybe as an opportunity as opposed to a danger. And then the second thing the website focuses is on self-management, which is some of those things we talked about earlier, diet, exercise.
Great. Meredith, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this website when we return after the break. You're listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and we're here discussing active surveillance in prostate cancer with Dr. Meredith Wallace.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2009, there'll be over 62,000 new cases of melanoma in this country, and about 2,400 patients will be diagnosed here in Connecticut alone. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. But when detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable. Clinical trials are underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Meredith, we were talking earlier in the show about the whole process of the diagnosis of prostate cancer by elevated PSA and the fact that a lot of men are actually followed and not treated for this. Now, you've done some research in this area looking at that whole process of how men feel about this. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the diagnosis of prostate cancer is obviously very disconcerting for men, and they've talked to me a lot about their feelings when they're diagnosed. Some are just shocked. Some just feel like punched in the stomach, hit over the head. It really shakes your whole concept of life, and it makes you look at your mortality more closely than anybody really ever had wanted to. It also affects the man's family, who is all of a sudden dealing with perhaps a life-threatening illness. And so very difficult for men to have to understand this diagnosis and then make treatment decisions and then live with the aftermath of the disease.
There's the whole issue of uncertainty, I imagine, when dealing with these patients. Uncertainty about the disease, uncertainty about the outcome and the future. And you specifically focused on this uncertainty issue in your study.
Yes.
Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. So when I had discussed earlier how I had originally been involved with screening men and couldn't understand why so many men who were appropriate for active surveillance were undergoing aggressive treatment. And one of the things that I found through my early work that really played an important factor is that the level of uncertainty after diagnosis with prostate cancer is very high and very similar to the diagnosis to the level of uncertainty with many other illnesses. And so that's one thing that I think we as nurses could focus on to help men to deal with that uncertainty so that the decision-making process is made more consciously and not influenced by that uncertainty and that need to get answers and to get cured.
So how do you actually deal with uncertainty?
Well, the intervention that we've put on the website is what we call an uncertainty management intervention. And it has been around for quite a few years and was originally developed by Dr. Merle Michelle at the UNC, University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And she really focused on what we call cognitive reframing or rethinking about cancer as a chronic illness. And what that allows us to do is examine our individual feelings that are automatic once we are diagnosed with a particular disease, particularly prostate cancer, and see if we could perhaps think about those things in a different way. So it goes through this kind of systematic process of rethinking the way that we've traditionally imaged prostate cancer.
Is this a process where the patient undergoes a number of different steps, or is this kind of a one-time analysis?
It's not. It's kind of between both of those things. So there's not actually a series of steps that they have to go through. It's kind of self-directed in terms of where the man starts with the uncertainty management and where he might feel like that he ends up. But one of the key components that's involved with it is a close relationship with a healthcare provider that you trust. And in this case, on the website, we really want men to interact with nurses and to ask questions and voice their feelings associated with prostate cancer diagnosis and then get the answer and the support that they need to go ahead and resolve those feelings of uncertainty.
Meredith, this is an excellent time to get into a really important question, which is to try to define the role of the different healthcare providers in caring for these men. Certainly, there's the urologist who may or may not be involved. There's the medical oncologist, mm-hmm. but also now the nurses are playing a much larger role, particularly the advanced practice nurses, and also, you know, just in oncology practice, some of the nurses that are there all the time interacting with patients. So can you talk a little bit about your role as a nurse and how that's different than the role of the other providers?
Right. I think it's actually truly unfortunate in some cases that prostate cancer patients can go through their whole prostate cancer diagnosis process without ever encountering a nurse if that particular urology practice doesn't have a nurse who is working within there. But I think, as you said, more and more urology practices and more medical oncology practices are employing nurses to help with that diagnostic and education process. So I think it's going to be very helpful for men as we go through the future, because nurses are traditionally very good teachers, and advanced practice nurses are very well educated to work with patients throughout all the disease trajectories.
And also, patients oftentimes feel more free to discuss things with a nurse than they would with their physician.
Yeah, and in fact, doing some of this early work, I was hesitant because I'm a woman, and obviously prostate cancer is a disease of men, and that men would not be comfortable talking about that with me, but that has not been the case at all. Men are often very comfortable to sit and talk with a nurse and to about all their uncertainties and ask a lot of questions and get the answers that they need, which will make the whole disease trajectory a little less painful for them.
So, Meredith, are you involved at all in training other nurses to do what you do?
Yeah. Well, my associate professorship at Yale obviously is highly focused on teaching. So I teach in the adult and gerontological nurse practitioner specialty, and we do clinical education and didactic education with nurses in these specialty programs. So hopefully they'll be well prepared to help patients.
Great. And your website you alluded to that has this uncertainty tool. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So this is a website we've developed over the last couple years. We've taken this traditional uncertainty management intervention and we've developed it into a website. A couple reasons that we decided to do that is, first of all, because men with prostate cancer, we know, need a lot of support and a lot of education, but often are not comfortable initially either going to support groups or asking those questions. So this was an opportunity for men to anonymously access the information and the support that they would need. So we felt that this was a really great format in which to provide the uncertainty management intervention. And what it does really is focuses, it gives a lot of prostate cancer information, a lot of information about active surveillance, and has a few pages devoted specifically to cognitive reframing, which is rethinking prostate cancer in a chronic illness framework. It also has several pages on self-management, so diet and exercise and smoking cessation and alcohol reduction, and where to get resources on all of those things, with direct links to the American Cancer Society web pages. And then there's also a number of links to some prostate cancer sites with men, which men who were who assisted in the development of the site felt were really very helpful.
How does a patient access this website?
Well, right now it's still under research, so it's not open in the free web framework. But at this point, you have to be a member of my study to actually get part of the access to the website.
When the website is opened up to the public, will it be opened up through Yale or through another organization?
Yeah, I think we can probably open it up through the Yale Cancer Center.
And as you mentioned, there'll be links to the American Cancer Society website. Will there be links from their website back to this website?
That's a possibility that we can consider in the future.
In terms of this website, so you would envision that men would, instead of going, say, through your study, be able to go directly to the website.
Right. So what we're in the process of doing right now is we have a number of men enrolled who are looking at the website and going through a period of, we calculated a period of about 5 weeks that would be helpful on the website, that patients would be able to get all the information that they were to need at that point in time. And we did some pre-testing, and we're going to do some post-testing with the men to see if it impacts their uncertainty and quality of life levels. So we want to wait till we have that data before we roll it out. We think that maybe there might be some changes that we need to make and some additions or taking some things out. One of the really great things about the website is that we developed it with active surveillance participants, and the website is very reflective of their questions and their concerns and their needs for information and support.
That's terrific. I'm sure the men were really interested in participating in that.
Yeah, it actually was a very gratifying process because they asked all these questions during the focus groups, and then we actually used that to develop the frequently asked questions page, and they saw their questions and they're like, oh, that's my question.
Great.
So it was wonderful.
Great. What about other support for these patients right now? Do they have support groups?
Yes. So the Cancer Center, there's a prostate cancer support group through the Yale Cancer Center, which is actually easy to access. And a number of men have stated that that process has been very beneficial for them. And the men in that support group are through all management strategies, men who've undergone radical prostatectomies, radiation treatment, hormone treatment, and active surveillance participants are all involved with that support group.
What about national national organizations like we see for breast cancer.
Yeah, there's a number of prostate cancer groups as well. Us Too is one group that men have thought was very helpful. And I think the American Cancer Society offers local groups as well.
What about the whole issue of patient blogs? Now, a lot of websites have blogs where patients can communicate with each other around specific diseases. Is that something that you can see would be incorporated into your website at any point?
Well, I've certainly thought about that, and I think my concern with prostate cancer is that there's so many treatment options and that there's such variability in terms of who's appropriate for which treatment. Even in my focus groups, I found some men trying to talk other men into a particular treatment which worked for them. So my concern with that is that I would want men to really be in a good relationship with a healthcare provider so that they're not influenced incorrectly into a particular treatment.
So from that point of view, you feel that the actual one-on-one support groups and direct interactions with the providers are really where men should get most of their information?
I really think so. And again, this is a problem specifically to prostate cancer where there is so much treatment variability.
When you talk about your website and your uncertainty tool, it makes me wonder whether that would actually be applicable to other cancer situations as well, because there are patients, say, with low-grade lymphoma who are also watched and waited.
Mm-hmm. And the uncertainty management intervention has been used with other cancer populations as well as other chronic illness populations. So, in fact, it was originally tested in the breast cancer population, and we've adapted it for prostate cancer patients.
Have you done anything with men on the flip side of the coin, men who have undergone treatment for prostate cancer and are now ostensibly cured?
It's very difficult to actually separate who's in active surveillance as opposed to who's been treated. So one of the studies that I'm just actually finishing up is in men who originally were in active surveillance and converted to treatment. And in that particular study, I've worked with a number of men who've had radical prostatectomies, radiation, and men who are currently receiving hormone therapy to examine their reasons on why they converted from active surveillance to active treatment.
Do those men still undergo a degree of uncertainty about their future, or do you feel that once something definitive has been done, that the degree of uncertainty is less?
That's funny you ask, because we actually asked that question. We said, do you have any regrets about your treatment? And most men felt very satisfied with the treatment decision they had made, and their levels of uncertainty were less after that period of time. But there were some things that came up with the study which were kind of interesting, one particularly being that men felt watchful waiting was a very dangerous thing to do. And the other thing being that men had a very sensible clinical track toward treatment, that where they had a rising PSA and they had clinical symptomatology that really forced them into treatment.
So Meredith, this has been a really enlightening discussion, and I think a very valuable discussion with respect to managing this disease, which is so prevalent in our population. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. You've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'd like to thank Dr. Meredith Wallace for joining me for this discussion about prostate cancer. From the Yale Cancer Center, this is Dr. Francine Foss wishing you a safe and happy week.
If you have questions or would like to share your comments, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.